Lace up your boots and grab your mouthguards. It's time for the Rugby Wrap, the podcast about all things Western Force and the game we love.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Wrap. We're here thanks to our good friends at Leap Strategies, and it's great to have you with us. My name's Mick Collis. Joining me on what has been another delightful day here in the West is a man who's had more interstate trips than Heath Testman has had buffets, Wallaby 735, Mitch Hardy. Mitch, where do we find you tonight?
Down Adelaide, Mickey. Gather around. There's a lot of momentum around that sport we care to mention down in Adelaide at the moment, but here for a couple of meetings over the next day before I head back to the beautiful territory where it's a balmy 31 degrees all day, every day, morning, noon and night.
I was going to say, you've got your beanie on and your puffer jacket down in Adelaide.
I was freezing today, Mickey, when I stepped off the plane, freezing. Forgot to bring the puffy jacket. I don't own one, actually. I'm pretty sure I left it in Perth.
Yeah, probably don't need one. Now, and Heath Testman, he's in surgery once again.
Yep, he's saving lives.
He's saving lives, so God bless him. And hello, Tess, if you're listening. Well, as we said last episode, a week is a long time in rugby, and the Western Force have shown us once again how true that is. So after being beaten by Moana Pacifica at home, they then bounced back to beat the Reds in Queensland to give us all hope. And then this week, they've been beaten 31-13 by the Drua in atrocious conditions in Fiji. Now, Mitch, was it just me, or was that a tough game to watch? Take the score out of it. Well, I found that a really tough game to watch.
It was a tough game to watch, Mickey, and I'm not sure the conditions helped the referee too much. He was pretty much guesswork the whole time. I'm not sure how much assistance he got from his assistant referees either during that game. But you kind of looked at the conditions and go, wow, anything could happen here, and it could even favour the Western Force with Fiji wanting to play their very open, flamboyant rugby. Like you're thinking, oh, this actually could be a bit of a level up, but it ended up being a bit of a mud bath, so to speak. But Fiji ended up running away. I just think they played the conditions better in the end, and that
I don't think they played the conditions. They just kept throwing it around.
No, and what really, I know it's just a minor thing, but what really impressed me about that game, which I kept saying to Trish, my wife, during the game, is how good Frank Lomani's pass was off the deck time and time again in those conditions. Like, you're basically fishing it out of half a foot of water every time, and he was just hitting the man every time. And the young 10 from Fiji Drua, oh, my Lord, how about the kicking exhibition in those conditions in that much water? Yeah. It is so hard to kick goal kick in those sort of conditions in half a foot of water. And yeah, he was nailing from everywhere. Yeah. That was a really good performance from that young 10. And I actually thought Ben Donaldson, that was a game that he really could have stepped up and controlled, and he probably fell away a little bit in that game as well. But I thought the forward pack, you know, they did their job again. Guys like Carlo Tozzano did his work. Tim Anstey was good. I think having Prinsloo at number 8 was a good move, and I think he brought a bit of metal to that back row this week. But it was a tough old funny game. Like, Sam Spink, we hardly heard him called in the commentary at all with any sort of carries. Yeah. And Hamish Stewart must have, I don't know, he must have topped the tackle count for the day, because the amount of tackles that bloke made in that game, he was probably my man of the match.
Yep.
Purely for the number of tackles that he had to make.
And I was watching Chase Tia, like, he was just frustrated because he was just throwing dumb passes. He was dropping the ball. Then he scored one and a half.
He put his arm over the sideline.
But it was the sort of game, like, I just found it frustrating because the amount of, I mean, yes, it was wet, but we were making, I mean, I guess the Western Force players haven't seen rain for probably 6 months, so it would have been very strange to go and play in a swimming pool. And where do you draw the line? Like, were you surprised that game went ahead? Because when it started,
It's fine. Just a bit of water.
Yeah, okay. All right.
No, played in worse. You could play in snow. They're playing snow. We played in ice. Snow.
In worse. But it was just very odd.
There was no mud on there. It was just water.
It was inches deep. It was, when they ran out, it was extraordinary.
Yeah, I actually felt sorry for the girls who played afterwards.
Yeah.
I don't know if you caught any of those highlights, but Jesus.
Yeah.
That was even harder to play on because it was already chopped up for the girls who played afterwards.
It was, and I thought the Force didn't seem to have a physical presence. Like, the Fijians will be going to those rucks and mauls, and they're just big, strong men. And they were just driving the Western Force back, and it seemed to be like that all day.
Yeah, and let's not forget, Fiji played with 14 men for 30 minutes of that game And I thought the red card was really harsh. That was so harsh.
Yeah.
Like it was a glancing blow at best.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Western Force player didn't have to go off HIA or anything. HIA. Like that.
I know. That's the bizarre thing.
It was a glancing blow. And when you're playing in those sort of conditions, surely the conditions are mitigating circumstances just in themselves. That how do you keep your feet when you're going to rucks and trying to avoid clashing with folks' heads where you've got mud in your eye and water streaming everywhere?
Yeah.
Like, and then it gets a red card. I thought that was very, very harsh, especially with this, you know, the new terminology that's crept in this year called the rugby accident.
Oh, right.
Where now it's a rugby accident and it doesn't have to be a red anymore if you clash heads.
Yep. But that one
seemed a bit bizarre to me, that red card, and I thought it was a bit harsh. And I think it was a bit premature by the TMO to award as such as well. But
was that the one on Nick White? When he ran through?
No, it was the one on Bailey Kunzel, I think it was, that he glanced. The guy just sort of speared in over the top.
Yeah,
Bailey
Kunzel
sort of feigned to go in to take the ball, but then backed out,
yep.
and he just glanced him on the jaw.
Yeah, okay.
Yep. No arms,
yep.
Head contact.
And then what about, at what point, so there was one stage there where Harry Potter was obviously injured and couldn't run, and they've targeted him on his side and they've ended up scoring on his side. At what point do you think get a guy off and how, or I mean, obviously they tried to see if he could run it out, whatever it might have been, but he's out this week. We'll get to that later on. But it just seemed for me, I was shouting at the TV, get him off because he just couldn't cover. So it was like they were down a man on that wide channels because he just couldn't get there.
Well, yeah. I mean, you just don't know what sort of communication channels they had out there and whether or not he was saying to the trainer, no, I'll run it out, I'll be right.
Yeah.
You don't know. There's different scenarios that could have been unfolding out there. And you'd like to think that a guy like Harry Potter, you need him in games like that.
Yeah.
And they kind of missed his finishing in the end, in my view.
But,
There was no one out there really that was going to break the line on the weekend.
Because
Ben Donaldson has been the go-to guy around line breaks. And it was a little bit more difficult on the weekend because of the conditions.
Yeah. So unfortunately for the Western Force, down 31-13 would have been nice to them. But, geez, and again, that place is just a tough place for anyone to go and play, isn't it?
It's the Fiji fortress. Yeah. Unbeatable at home.
Nah. It really is.
But this is the growth that we're seeing in Fiji rugby as well, is that they have turned that place into a fortress, and the more home games they get, the good crowds, good coverage, and it's quite often, you know, subject to the conditions, the game of the day. When you see Fiji's playing at home, you generally watch that one.
Have a look. Yeah. Because they played. And there was one time, I can't even think, it might have been that 10, like in the pouring rain and the wet, and did that audacious cross kick, you know, from just 10 metres in front of their own line. Just, it's great. They're great to watch, and they don't care what the weather is. Yeah. They've just got this wonderful style they're playing.
Yeah, and they've got some good coaches there in Glenn Jackson and Mick Byrne. They seem to be a really good balanced coaching lineup. They don't have five coaches, Mick.
Yep.
Six coaches, eight coaches.
You don't need them.
They just seem to be a very good duo.
Yeah.
And Simon Rulini in the box there again.
Yep.
Helping out.
Back.
Yep.
Yep. No, so good. So good result for the Fijians. So in other games, the Rebels 27, Waratahs 21.
Oh, what about that one?
That was an awful game.
Oh, that was hard work, Mick. That was Friday, wasn't it? That was Easter Friday.
That kicked it off.
God, that made the long weekend even longer. The game. I don't know if that's got anything good to say about that game. It feels like it was so long ago. But Taniela Tupou, I reckon, how long did you reckon he played in that game? 30 minutes? 40 minutes?
Back end?
Came on just after half time, maybe?
Yeah.
Man of the match.
Yeah, wasn't he? Wasn't he?
Man of the match. Turnovers, scrum, carries, leadership.
Yeah.
Everything you want from a guy coming off the bench. And for a guy like him, caliber-wise, like he made a massive impact to that game. And pretty much turned it on its head and put the Rebels in front.
Was that scrum? The Rebel scrum was so dominant.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Very good performance.
But another
very good all-round performance.
I was reading some stuff. So the Waratahs, they're missing four of their seven contracted props. So
who's that? Angus Bell.
So Angus Bell was out. I don't know by name, but Darren Coleman. He's thrown this kid in called Jack Barrett.
How sorry did you feel for Jack Barrett? 20 minutes.
Super Rugby debut. So he's 19. Yeah, dragged up.
And I've got to say, Colts out of Randwick.
dragged in the 21st minute. Obviously, no. So and anyway, and so Cam Shepherd was terrific, and he was reported during the week, and he's questioning why a teenager who had yet to start in a senior match was called up to pack down against one of Australia's best packs. And he says, he's quoted, and he says, "Is that a result of our development pathway where we're identifying these kids at 14 years of age, putting them in Gen Blue, which is what it's called in Sydney, avoiding their involvement in Shoot Shield and developing them in the gym and on the training park more than on the field?" He said, "That's the pathway that we seem to be selecting out of. Instead, why aren't the top 10 front rowers in New South Wales or every state listed and then analysed and then brought in?" So I'm completely with him. Why pull a kid who's never played a game of first grade, 19, in that Super Rugby? That doesn't make sense to me.
No, it completely doesn't make sense to me, Mick. And it doesn't make sense to me how, again, the Ramic connection influence in that New South Wales setup at the moment seems to be getting stronger and stronger and stronger. The more pressure Darren Coleman gets put on, the conspiracy theorist in me is very wary of how many Ramic players are starting to creep into that Waratahs setup and how much influence they're having on selections, because that's just insanity.
Hmm.
Because you cannot tell me that out of the, 14 first grade premier clubs in the Shoot Shield,
yep,
there isn't a prop better than that kid.
Yep,
would be happy to debut for New South Wales. But no, he's in the academy. We're paying him. Well, let's pick him.
Yeah.
You know, that's insanity. The poor kid got 20 minutes and just got absolutely wrist-holed. And so the coach pulls him off. What does that do for the kid's confidence now? Like, that's not development. That's just crushing him, because we'll probably never see – we may or may not ever see him again.
Mm.
But he needs to – you know, that kid like that needs to play, you know, three seasons of first grade and be dominating before you get a gig. And surely within this five-tier system that we have around this country, there's another prop out there that was ready, willing to go. Like if I think about for example, a Reggie Churchwood, right?
Yeah.
Right, yep. Reggie's been in the Western Force wider training squad, went on the tour, mature rugby player, big unit. Why wouldn't you just go, you know what, let's do a trade. We need a starting prop. Can we have Reggie?
Yep.
On loan for three games or four games. Like, he's not doing anything else at the moment other than playing preseason comp.
Mm.
Maybe, if at all, if he's allowed with his load.
Yeah. that's mind-boggling. If that is the system where you're pulling a 19-year-old kid
The Shoot Shield's our best premier rugby comp in Australia. Why haven't we got another prop?
And there would be. There'd be what of them, 12 or 14 of them that would have done it. Obviously nothing against the kid. He can play in it, and he's never going to say no. But, geez, they were setting him up to fail, and I don't think it was fair that they threw him in. Never played a game of first grade.
I agree. We're putting too much emphasis on that 20s pathway at the moment. We're seeing it. It's been detrimental to the Sevens program as well, as I believe, where they're just picking kids into this Sevens program straight as Aussie schoolboys and Aussie 20s and going, oh, we'll put him there.
Yeah.
And just make sure all the kids that if you've got a Aussie schoolboy jumper or an Aussie 20s jumper, you automatically get a gig somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. I think, if anything, that, you know, Western Australia won the Sheffield Shield the other week, right?
Hmm.
For the third time in a row. All their players that they pick and all the players that they bring through are all performing at a high level at premier club level.
Yeah.
So they don't pluck guys out of thin air. They have to be consistently performing week in, week out at premier club level to even get a look in at, you know, WACA level or WA first 11 or second 11 level. Yep. So, I mean, and cricket, in my view, and why Western Australia is so successful at cricket is because that's their selection system.
Hmm.
And it's like Cricket Australia at the moment with their contracting of players. Like, okay, the two fast bowlers have just brought in and Martin Short, well, they're picking those guys on merit and form. They performed above and beyond the normal state-based players, so they get a Cricket Australia contract. And rugby's got to take a bit of a leaf out of sports like that are merit-based contracting, merit-based selection.
Yeah, because we definitely put too much emphasis on, and it's always been the same, you know, if you make this, once you're in the system, you're in the system and you can't get out of it and you can't get in if you're not in it. And there was a book called Australia's Toughest Sports People, Dean Jones is interviewed, and he's scathing of that whole sort of under 20 system, because he said he would rather, he might go and score 100 against New Zealand at under 19 level, but he said getting 100 against Carlton in first grade, he said that's a much better 100 than 100 against kids your own age. And we get caught up with these kids that are good against their own age, like this young 19-year-old that was good, throw them in at a decent level, and they come undone. So it's they've got to be playing club rugby. I just think their first, if they sign for 3 years, that means, you know, 3 years of playing shoot shield. Then you progress that next bit, Anyway, and Waratah's terrible, and Cam Shep, he just ripped in him during the week, and he was also saying, is there a culture that mistake-making and losing is acceptable? And he said, you saw Dylan Peach ran down the sideline. Two or three guys are marked inside. He should have drawn and passed, and Jake Gordon runs in to score, yet they're giving him high fives and giving him bum paps when he's running back. He said he should have been let out to the car park, put in a car and sent home. And he's again, he's dead right.
Oh, how good Shep can. Yeah. You know what really got up my goat with that Dylan Peach episode is he laughed it off.
Yeah, that's
the
thing.
It was a great big bloody joke. Yeah. And he did it later in the game as well when he made a couple of glaring errors.
Yep, high fives and bum pats.
You go, mate, I get the whole mental whatever you want to call it, mental toughness on a field, and, you know, you have a certain way of dealing with failures and mistakes, but don't let everyone see you're having a good time when you've just completely just ballsed up an absolute gimme try. And we're seeing it far too often from some of these so-called professional rugby players, like Harry Wilson the other week where he dropped the kickoffs cold and things like that. And you've got Dylan Peach, who's meant to be a, you know, knocking on the door Wallaby selection, completely balls up a try and then laughs it off. And then later in the game, after another really bad mistake, laughs it off again. If I was Darren Coleman, I'd be going, mate, nothing's funny about that.
Yeah.
Nothing's funny about it. What's so funny?
Yeah.
I'll tell you what's funny. You being on the bench, not the 23 for the next 6 weeks, pal.
Exactly.
Go back and play with your Randwick mates.
Yeah. That's what he's doing at the Waratahs. So, yeah, so not a good week. And you know, again, poor old Darren Coleman. Things aren't working
gone.
Well.
Gone. At the
moment. Yeah. It's gone. Anyway. And then
and just on the Randwick thing, conspiracy theory. You heard it here first, Mick. Stephen Hoyle's next Waratahs coach.
Oh, really? Okay.
I'm calling it.
All right.
I'm putting it out there. The Randwick Mafia is at play.
They're at play. All right. You heard it here first. Well, wait and see. Then in the match of the round, the Brumbies 20, Reds 19. Now, I think I was the only one that picked that out of us last week.
Yeah, I picked the Reds for the upset, didn't I?
Yeah.
And the Reds should have won too.
Yeah, good game though.
Oh, it's good. Yeah, it was a good game. It was a really good game. I'm still, I was yelling at the TV. I was actually going for the Brumbies during the game, even though I picked the Reds. I was yelling at the TV. I thought Noel Alessio had probably one of his poorer games. He's just decision-making and just being able to control the game was very poor, and he's probably kept the Reds in it. And I was desperate to see Declan Meredith come on the field. I reckon if Steve Larkin given that Declan Meredith 30 minutes.
Oh, he's the one. He's the one you rate, isn't he? You're talking about the other week.
And he won't play him. I don't know why he won't play him.
Yeah, okay.
He's just not getting him any game time. Maybe he's protecting him, not letting people see him this early in the season or whatever. But yeah, I would have loved to have seen Noah come off the field with maybe 30 minutes to go and see what happens, because I actually think Harrison Goddard, who was probably unlucky not to retain his spot in the starting 15, I thought he had a very good game the week before, because he's got a wonderful pass, and Lonigan struggled a little bit, I thought Darcy Swain was fantastic. Like, his abrasiveness and aggressiveness and physicality around the park was very good again. And again, I think the difference was just the Brumbies' back row and depth just seemed to get him there, and Tom Wright played out of his head. I thought he was very good.
He was real good.
Yeah, the two other inside centre had another very good game. He's been in very good form. And the Reds just, they hung in there, but they didn't quite get the chocolates for one reason or the other. Wasn't anything poor about their game. I thought they were pretty good. I thought Saru Iru was much better this week. I thought Fraser McWright was really good. I think the struggling at 10, when Hudson Crichton came on, I think that was a big turning point for them when he came on as their backup 10. And, you know, when you going against Noel Alessio, and Alessio is not having a great game. I think they really missed that Lachlan Phillips kid coming off the bench. Okay. I think he's been doing a really good job, but I think those little subtleties were probably the difference between the two.
And then we talk about inconsistencies with head knocks. There was a moment in that game, it was early on, sort of eight or ninth minute, and Jordan Petaia got cleaned up. I think I got a penalty for it. And it rattled him because he stayed on the ground for a bit, but no one checked him, nothing happened, and he played on. I just think
that was in a tackle, wasn't he? He got his head in the wrong spot.
He got hit, and he stayed on the ground for a bit. Yeah. Obviously, because it was a head knock, but again, nothing was checked. So it's just, I know. Look, they're trying to get it right, but there are still a lot of inconsistencies in the way that's dealt with.
Oh, so. Absolutely. Yeah, be interesting to see if he has to sit out this week.
Yeah, and then the Hurricanes 47 destroyed the Highlanders 12.
Oh, mate, the Hurricanes are on fire. Mm. They are just playing such good footy, and again, there's just players all over the park performing for them. Like the winger, Roy Guard's the bloody nine. I'll think of the winger's name in a minute. The number 14, who's just having an outstanding season. I've got a mental block. Mickey, you'll have to Google his name for me.
Yeah.
But I think they're just from 1 to 15, or 1 to 23 for that matter, with TJ Perenara coming on when Cam Roygaard had that very serious injury. Karifi's coming off the bench for them, and the seven that was in front of him, the young Fijian kitty, you know, playing outstanding footy. They're just good.
Yeah.
Very good. And the Highlanders didn't do much wrong. They just got beaten by a better team.
Mm. So yeah, no, they're on fire.
I hate to put the mock on them, but they're the new front runners.
Team to beat.
Yeah.
Yep. And then speaking of teams to beat, the Blues looking pretty good. 47 over Moana 8.
Oh, yeah. That was just very one-sided affair, I thought, that one. I had that one sort of just bubbling along in the apartment across the afternoon, and it was just try after try, and it was like, oh, this is a bit of a one-sided affair, Blues. And I know they had John Hart there doing doing presentations, and I think there was a bit of a presentation to the Ricky Riccitelli, one of the unsung heroes of New Zealand rugby.
Yep.
One of my favourite backup hookers of all time. Heath would love that, Ricky Riccitelli. Played his 150th Super Rugby game or something.
Yep.
The Blues were just good. Nothing spectacular about them, but they're good. They're a little bit hot and cold still, and Moana Pacifica, I think, doing it a little bit tough at the moment in the mid parts of the competition.
Yep. And then when the Western Force beat the Reds, that was the upset of the season, but there's a new one. Who'd have thought? Crusaders 37, Chiefs 26.
Oh, I rolled the dice two for none and six, Mickey. I thought, yeah, but I didn't count on the Chiefs not having Damien McKenzie. They did miss him. They were a different team without him there. But the Crusaders, they'll take a lot of confidence out of that, getting 36 points against the Chiefs. That's shaking the duck, and they're off the mark. They've hit one to the boundary, and they're feeling a lot better about themselves.
Geez, they needed it. They really needed it.
Didn't they what?
It'd be good to see where they go.
Yeah, and there were some good performances there too. Like some of their young forwards really stepped up on the weekend, I thought, as well, Mickey. It was a much better Crusader-like performance, I thought.
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't so mistake-ridden.
And then just having a look at the ladder then after that, so after the sixth round. So the Hurricanes, they're clear on top. They're on 27 points. Then the Blues and the Brumbies both on 22. The Chiefs in fourth on 18. Then the Reds in fifth on 16. Then the Rebels in sixth place on 14. The Drua in seventh on 13. Highlanders eighth on 11. And then Moana ninth, Waratahs 10th, Crusaders 11th, and the Western Force in 12th spot. So the Hurricanes are certainly setting the standard at this early stage of the season. And then in the Super W, the Brumbies 31 over the Reds 14. The Drua 19 defeating the Force 5. So the Fiji bouncing back after that loss to the Waratahs last week, and then the Waratahs women 38 against the Rebels 17. So good effort by the Rebels women, because the Tars, they're probably red-hot favourites at this stage. Yep. So the 38-17, the Rebels Rebels women did pretty well.
Yeah, and I think the Western Force women, that's a pretty good effort going all the way to Fiji, playing in those conditions, which then none of them would ever have played in before.
No.
And it's a real tough gig, that one, especially playing after the men. And the probably the disappointment this year is the way the Reds have been a little bit hot and cold in the Super
Yes.
W.
Yeah, yeah.
That's been a little bit surprising this year, going down to the Brumbies this week, and I think they've really been struggling week in, week out. So it'd be interesting to see how it all pans out and who finishes on top this year. But obviously the Waratahs are the front runners at the moment.
Yeah, so it's been a good comp. So we'll take a short break and be back to preview this week's games. You're listening to the Rugby Wrap.
G'day, I'm Connor Jenkins. When Mick Collis first heard about Leap Strategies, he thought we specialised in finding new ways for line-out jumpers to get more height. The fact is, we're all about keeping your business data safe from online threats. So if you have digital assets that need protection, call Leap Strategies on 1300 77 LEAP or visit leapstrategies.com.au.
So thanks again to Connor and the team at Leap Strategies, and cheerio to his dad, Stewie, a legend of Central Coast rugby and a listener of the podcast. So looking ahead to next week, it's tipping time. Friday, 2:05 p.m. Perth time, the 12th placed Western Force up against the second placed Blues. So just the Force, the lineup, the starting 15, Ryan Coxon, Tom Horton, Sandio Magdrago in the front row, Sam Carter and Tom Franklin in the second row, Tim Anstey, Carlo Tozzano and Reid Princep in the back row, Nick White, skipper again, Ben Donaldson, Hamish Stewart, Sam Spink in the centres, Chase Tiatia and Bailey Kunzel on the wings, and Max Bury starting at 15. And then on the bench, Ben Funnell, Marley Pearce, Tien, Tau Kapulu, Lepeti Faifua, Will Harris, Ollie Callan, Isaac Fiennes, Lelewasa and Henry O'Donnell. So Sam Carter promoted to the starting 15, Max Bury starting at fullback with Harry Potter unavailable due to that ankle injury we spoke about. Dunlop Brothers product, Marley Pearce, he's back. And back row, Will Harris, they're both. So Marley back from a suspension and Will from head injury protocols respectively. And then Henry O'Donnell, the utility back, he's in line to make his maiden appearance. He's played for the Force A, had a good cameo against the ACT Brumbies in preseason. So yep. Chance for that young fella. Yeah.
Yeah, he can play, that Henry O'Donnell. He's got a good turn of foot and he can slot in at 13. So it gives us a bit more attacking power there, but Blues at home is going to be a real tough gig. That's a tough gig,
isn't it?
And they've got a little bit of momentum now to the Blues. If you let them get out of the gates quick, if the Western Force start well in the first 20 minutes and go toe-to-toe with them leading into halftime, they could cause an upset. But if the Blues get out of the gates and get ahead of them, get their heads up, good night, Irene, put the glasses down, go to the bar. Yeah.
So the Force need to do against the Blues what they did against the Reds. They've just got to come out, score some points, confidence, and see how they go.
Control the game. Trying to control the game as much as they can.
Then on Friday, the Rebels against the Drua.
That'd be a good game, Mick.
Tough one to call
Rebels
that one.
Rebels
at home?
Oh, geez. I'll go Rebels, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Go Rebels. I think they've got a bit of a spring in their step, and Fiji don't travel as well as we know.
Yeah.
And I just think, they've had a tough couple of weeks. Hard games, but good games at home, and I just think they'll probably struggle against the Rebels. And if the Rebels are injury free and able to field their best team, I think I'll go with them.
Got them. Then on Saturday, the Chiefs against Moana.
Oh, Chiefs! Are they going to have Damien back?
We hope so. I don't know. Not sure, but yeah, I think regardless, I think they'll be too strong for Moana. And then also Saturday, the Waratahs up against the Brumbies.
Oh, could it get any worse for the Waratahs?
Well, have their next four games. They've got the Brumbies, then they've got the Crusaders, the Chiefs, and then the Hurricanes. And they've got a bye in the middle.
Oh, Lord. So
three of those teams in the top four.
That could be 1-10.
Yeah, they could be. Stephen Halls might be in charge by then.
Yeah. I'll go the Brums.
Yeah, I think
the wheels are off the Tars.
I don't know. I mean, no, last week was terrible. Last week was terrible. I think up until that point, I was sort of thinking, look, it's been a kick either way, but just last week, and that, as Cameron Shepherd said, they're just accepting mediocrity at the moment, and so they've got to change that before they start winning, but it's just a nightmare. And because it's such a long season, everyone else has got to buy this week, so only those three games. And then in Super W, it's week 4 of 5, the penultimate round already on Friday, the Rebels up against the Reds, the Brumbies against Fijiana on Saturday, and the Western Force against the Tars at 3:05.
That's the big one. That's the that's the game of the round.
Which one, the Brumbies Fiji or Force Tars?
The Force Tars. Women's game. That'll be the pick of the games out of men's and women's all weekend, I reckon. That'll be a cracker. Yeah. Everyone so tune into that one.
That's 3:05 Western time, that one. And
We've got all the club rugby starting off this weekend too.
Well, we've got the Challenge Cup round. So, yes, so I think Shoot Shield kicks off this week. And here in Perth, the Challenge Cup round two is on Saturday. So we've got Kalamunda against UWA, Joondalup against Cottesloe, Netties against Wanneroo, and Southern Lions against Soaks, and then playing. So they're still in for the Cup. And then the losers of last week are playing for the Shield. So we got Rockingham up against Perth Bayswater, the Mandurah Pirates up against Pally. So a big one for them. West up against Arcs, and Kwinana against the Bunbury Barbarians. So
what happens there, Mickey? They play this weekend, and then does the main comp then start?
Then the main comp starts, and then a couple of weeks, and they jump back in again.
And the Canberra finals comps, in June. The Canberra and Brisbane comps both kick off this weekend, as well as the Shoot Shield, maybe? Brisbane comps another week. Canberra's definitely kicking off this weekend.
Yeah, okay. So, plenty of rugby kicking off. And just unfortunately, for all the Challenge Cup games, which is on Saturday, it's the same time as the Western Force Waratahs game.
Oh, for the ladies.
Yeah. So it's, again, just a shame that we can't pool our resources and have everyone watching.
And the Western Force Waratahs game is at?
At home.
At?
At HBF.
Oh, right. Beautiful. Okay.
So, again, everyone's out watching the club side and you can't really get to, you can't be in two places at one time.
No, you can't, Mick. No.
So, scheduling, still having a few teething problems, but not much further to go for those women. So, let's hope that can be fixed in if not this season, for next season, because Rugby WA and the Western Force, they're now talking with the new CEO.
That's a bit of a shame, isn't it? Because they could have really done something innovative there around getting all the clubs down to support the girls against the Tars and give them a real boost.
Yep, correct. Even done a curtain raiser, one of the men's Challenge Cup games as a curtain raiser.
That would have been the go.
Yeah.
Why couldn't they have done one of the Challenge Cup games as a curtain raiser?
Yeah, not sure. Not sure. But a wasted opportunity. And that'll take us to the mailbag. And the big news, Mitch, floating around, is the Rebels may be saved by this 11th-hour private equity cash injection. So they reckon that it's been led by a bloke called Lee Clifford, who's the former Qantas chairman, and he said that they're trying to raise $30 million to invest into the Reds, and they're going to move them and partner them up with an A-League side, Western United, and move them out to the western suburbs of Melbourne, where they're building a 15,000-seat stadium in a place called Tarnet. There's already a 5,000-seat stadium there, and apparently that area, it's home to one of the largest Pacific communities in Australia, already got a big rugby union fan base in that western side of Melbourne. So these people are keen. Apparently they've sort of raised about 20, but my question is, fantastic, for they can do that, great, and there's obviously it's a very rich ground with that Pacifica support, but that 20 million, like, that's going to go pretty quick, because again, it's not going to be making money.
Cost you $30 million a year to run a team. Like you've got to think of the staffing, the coaches, the players, all your travel costs, all your team overheads, your staffing overheads. And then you get a little bit of money from Rugby Australia to help you pay your player salaries. Mm. And Sanzar chip in for some bits and pieces along the way as well. I just don't know if they can afford that. It's very short term. But
they can bail them out.
Can buy them for a dollar.
Yep. So they've got $30 million, which will basically might give them a season. But those private equity, are they going to put that same money in every year to keep it going? I mean, it's great if they can make it work, and they reckon that can.
If they can start turning a dollar, 15,000-seat stadium. If they've got a 15,000-seat stadium,
and that'll be ready. In 2026-27. So they've got a 5,000-seat stadium for 2 years, which you're not going to pull a lot of money.
Not going to make much out of that.
If you've got six home games, seven home games, that's 35,000 people. Yeah. That's basically one good crowd. And then from then they got the 15,000. So look, if they can make it work, it'd be great. But I just can't. And I hope it comes off for them, because there's obviously a lot of people with jobs on the line. But you've got to ask yourself, how is that going to be sustainable? They're going to have to do something very different that no one else is doing in Super Rugby to be able to turn a profit.
Yep, and they're going to have to just be running on a smell of an oily rag far as overheads go with game.
Well,
day
I guess
costs,
they. I guess costs, by moving costs. In. And sort of combining with Western United, they can split a lot of those admin kind of costs, but there's still the rugby costs are independent. and they're still going to be pretty high. But I think it's a look. And it makes A-League, sense. Makes sense to do it.
The A-League play across the summer.
Yeah.
And so you're still going to have a vacant stadium from June to October.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. But there's a glimmer of hope for the Rebels fans and, you know, maybe moving it out to that. I mean, that's like the Western Sydney dream that they keep talking about. If they could do it in Melbourne, tap into that crowd.
Well, certainly there's not short of people down there in Melbourne, are they? I mean, there'd be more than 15,000 people living in that area. So
absolutely.
If you can capture the local market and guarantee yourself 10, well, I always said if the Force can get 10,000 a game, they'll start making money.
Yep.
At HBF, 10,000 is the break even.
Mm-hmm.
Anything less than 10, you're losing money.
You're losing money, yeah.
So if they get more than 10 to a game, and they're certainly not getting that at Amy Park.
No. And again, you know, a 5 or 15,000 seat stadium with 10,000 is a lot better than Amy Park with 10,000 too.
You have a better rugby experience at a small stadium anyway, in my view.
Correct. Absolutely.
Yeah,
no
especially
doubt.
If it's going to be a brand new one too, because you would have thought, you know, there's going to be decent toilets and decent bars and
everything
be
able shiny. To
get there easy enough and parking and public transport and all the rest of it. So you'd like to think they could make it work, and they're not short of corporate support around the place. It's just about harnessing it and making sure you're minimising your overheads.
Yeah,
it could be a bit of a lifeline. Rugby Australia will be sort of sweating bullets on that one, I reckon.
Mm. Yeah, and I haven't, yes, because I mean, if they're... I thought they might be relying on that legal action that might tip a bit more coin into the...
You reckon they'll settle, coppers, have a settlement.
As well. Yeah, we'll wait and see. And then James Slipper becomes the most capped Australian in Super Rugby history when he takes the field on Saturday against the Waratahs. So he's been named in the starting side for the Clash at GAO Stadium. He goes past Stephen Moore's record with his 178th appearance. And the funny thing is he thought he was going to get it last week, but it was discovered that Stephen Moore, he was recorded as having played 176 caps for the Reds and Brumbies, but he had one missed in 2017 because the name Sam Moore instead of Stephen Moore was written down on the game sheet. So they discovered that.
Oh, turn it up, Mick. So
they gave him another cap. So poor old James Slipper had another week. But that's an amazing record, 178 appearances.
I actually like that. I actually like that someone's knocked Stephen Moore off because I wasn't a huge fan. So I think he's well deserved. He's become a bit of a character, James Slipper, in my view. I reckon he's aged and developed with maturity, and I don't know whether it was the documentary that won me over or other things that he's done with his playing career, but I think he's grown a lot of respect and he's well respected. He seemed to be well respected around rugby traps now. Yep. And I think some of his performances has earned him that respect as well. And you know, obviously, there was a couple of blemishes on his record early on in the piece when he was a young buck at the Reds. He probably did the wrong thing, which gave everyone a bit of a sour taste. But I think since then, he's been certainly a stalwart of the Brumbies and deserves all the accolades he gets, really. Yeah. I can't say that he's certainly done himself and the Wallaby jersey proud over many years.
Yeah. And he's got that old school feel about him. Like you'd expect him at, you know, full time to pull a dart, to sit in the change room with a dart. I mean, I'm sure he doesn't, but he's kind of got that. I think he's very likable because he's got that persona. He's a bit. He's just got
never
that old
seems
school.
Flustered. He never seems flustered. He's not a dirty player. He's still got a good physical presence. He does his job. He's very tradesmanlike, and his game's developed as the game's developed. He's developed with it.
Yep. Yeah, so congratulations. That's a magnificent record for him. Then the Hong Kong Seven starts on Friday. So Michael Hooper.
Oh, look out.
Michael Hooper's set to make his debut.
Are they going to pick him, Mick, you reckon?
Well,
they'll just run him on and run him off for a minute per game.
So John Minetti, the coach, he's been pretty close to knowing his best squad. So there's eight players. This will be their sixth consecutive tournament playing together. And then add to those, you've got Maurice Longbottom, Henry Patterson, Henry Hutchison, who'll come in because they've missed a couple of tournaments. So it's a pretty settled squad. There's 12 that they can take, and I think they might take a 13th as a reserve. I'm not sure what the Olympics, they often change the numbers around, but do you take Michael Hooper to the Olympics?
Well, no, not yet. You've got to play him first.
Yeah, so if he plays this weekend, I think there's a couple more to go. Do they take him? Because he's had a bit of an armchair ride in there. There's a lot of other kids.
Is he going over there to play, or is he going over there to commentate again?
Well, I think he's gone there.
Because that's all we seem to be doing at the moment. He's playing to be commentating.
But he's not very good at that. I don't recommend him.
I think he needs to choose an alternate career path beyond rugby than commentating.
He's gone there to play. Do you think if they play him, will they pick him? Will there be pressure on to pick him? Why put him in that situation if they're not going to pick him?
Well, they made such a big deal about him transitioning to sevens. They've got to pick him and see how he goes. When I compare him to Antoine Dupont, who played sevens and absolutely ran amok and was a complete and utter absolute freak, who basically went, yeah, you're going to the Olympics, pal.
Yeah.
Because he was awesome. If he can play something resembling Dupont, I'd be a happy camper saying, oh, thank God for that. It's all okay. Worth every cent.
Yeah.
He's got to be proven, Mick. He's got to be more than one game. He can't be a flash in the pan. He's got to actually have to play that tournament, start in games, finish games, and actually play well to deserve his spot to go to the Olympics. Otherwise, we're just giving him an Olympic tattoo for the sake of it.
Armchair ride, which I don't agree with.
Shazza would be horrified, mate.
Would be absolutely horrified.
Yeah.
And then in other news, so Mike Cron, widely regarded as the world's foremost expert in scrummaging, he had a 35-year coaching career. Now, he's been picked up by the Wallabies as the new scrum coach.
Didn't see that coming.
Joe Schmidt has picked him. So do you think that, and he's Simon Cron's uncle, so maybe that might help to get a bit of
Simon Cron might create a career pathway for himself.
For the Western
Force. Might have to win a few more games of rugby.
And apparently his methods and his techniques, they're going to be deployed in junior pathway teams, male and female. To have this uniform approach to scrummaging, which I think is a good idea.
Yes.
But he's going to be based in Christchurch and will commute.
No, Mick, no.
That's what I read.
So we've got two old Kiwis coaching the Wallabies now.
And one's living in New Zealand.
And one's living in New Zealand. And Laurie Fisher's not a spring chicken either.
No. At least he's in Australia.
They're all being in bed by six every day.
Because do you think he's obviously got good credentials. Is that where Australian rugby is at the moment that we
Mike
need?
Mike Cron is one of the gurus of scrum coaching. You can't begrudge that.
And no.
If I remember back when Ron McQueen was coach of the Wallabies, he had Jake Howard as his scrum doctor back then. Yep. And Jake was very well regarded and a real scientist as far as the arts of the scrummaging.
Yep.
So maybe it's more like a Jake Howard type role where he's doing the technical stuff, doing a few scrum schools, building up the new generation of the prop within Australian rugby. I like the idea of that. I don't know Mike Cron, but I've never heard anyone say a bad word about him and his coaching style. And if Joe Schmidt has been able to get him over the line and part of the bargaining chip was for him to be able to stay in Christchurch and fly out, then it's probably worth a punt. I mean, getting Laurie and Fisher on board was a major step forward in my view. But I think now he needs to balance that out with a little bit of attacking genius. Who's going to be in charge of the attacking side of things now, Mick? That's the last missing piece of the puzzle. Yeah, I think a four coach panel would be a nice balanced lineup.
Yeah.
Who is going to be the fourth coach that's going to look after attack?
Yeah, okay.
Let's face it, no point in being a scrummage and tackle if you can't score tries.
Correct. And should it be an Australian, or are we at the point where we've just got to get whoever's kind of available and good?
Whoever's going to bring out the best in the players, which I think has to be an Australian, to be honest, because knowing Australian backs are a little bit fickle.
Yep.
So probably better off having Australian to deal with them.
I just think you can't.
Who is that going to be?
And you've got to, we talk about pathways. You've got to show Australian coaches that they can get a gig at the Wallabies. That you can't just be cherry picking guys from outside. I think they've got to dangle a bit of a carrot, otherwise.
The Aussie backline doesn't pick itself either, mate. There's some forwards there that you'd go, oh yeah, we know pretty much the core group of forwards at the moment. But backs, Jesus.
Yeah, it's pretty wide open, isn't it?
Mm.
So
I don't know. I don't know. I think that fourth coaching position is a real key one, to be honest.
Yeah, okay.
And I when you think about it, who's on the shortlist for backs coaching? And don't employ a leaguey or don't employ an ex-forward who thinks he can coach backs.
Yeah.
Like that's part of my beef with John Minetti doing the sevens. Like John Minetti would never have played sevens in his life. He's only watched it on TV. So how is he able to coach sevens?
Yeah, yeah. That's true.
He struggled to get around Buddy Eastwood back in the day, mate. But you know, but I don't know. I don't know. The backs coach for the Wallabies is a real open. I mean, I don't think it's appropriate for Steve Larkham to slot in there. I think if he was going to be coaching, he should be head coach. But that's up to him. But who else is backs? Who is the backs coaches out there? Maybe Chris Whittaker. He's floating around at the back of the Waratahs.
Yeah, yeah.
Set up at the moment.
You think there'd be some people?
You know, you look at the Waratahs backline; they're not set.
Yeah, not exactly set the world on fire. Yeah, that's right.
Then you got Les Kiss and Co up in Brisbane.
Yeah,
couldn't tell you who's coaching the Western Force backs at the moment. He's a foreigner. If he's not Australian, I don't think there's any Aussies coaching at the Force. So yeah, that rules them out.
Yeah,
Melbourne Wise, who's doing the backs at the Rebels?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Don't know. Don't know.
But
you'd like to think they'd be getting a sniff.
We could put that out to the Rugby Wrap listeners saying, who's going to be coaching the Wallaby backline?
Yeah.
We'd give us your suggestion. Give us your shortlist. Who's out there?
Chuck it on the Twitter. But I think it's at @rugby_wrap or on Facebook at the Rugby Wrap. Yeah, we'd love to know. We might even put that question out there. And then finally, so there was a good article. Paul Cully, he just threw it out there saying, should professional rugby in Australia, you did mention earlier about the soccer, should professional rugby in Australia be a summer sport played from September through to May? Club rugby stays in that community window from April to August.
Is he an AFL journalist?
No. He's just saying to get away from the NRL and the AFL. Because in South Africa started doing it. And they're getting 40,000 to 50,000 people to watch the Stormers and the Bulls play on a warm summer evening.
They're not playing down summer, for nowhere. No, Curry Cup's played in bloody August, September, October, isn't it?
I don't know. Off the top of my head.
Not played in summer, mate. It's August, September, October. ITM Cup is August, September, October.
But do you think rugby... So what's your... For professional rugby not to be played over on a summer night?
I don't like the idea of super. I've never have been a fan of Super Rugby starting in February. I've never liked that idea. I reckon we go head to head with league and AFL, and we're a winter sport, and that's where it should be played, and that's where we need to keep targeting. I like the idea of rugby being a winter sport.
Yes,
and gets played from March to September.
Yep.
Would you A-League and the NBL and. Yeah, A-League and NBL have got that space. You'd still be going up against those two.
Against them, yeah.
And cricket. Like, yes. Why would you go up against cricket, A-League and NBL?
That's
you're better
true.
Off just trying to do something different. I mean, I think we need to be innovative. We missed the boat when league went to Thursday nights and AFL went to Thursday nights. And then there was the Monday night games. And, yeah, I think we sort of missed the boat a bit there. We always seem to be three steps behind those other two codes as far as being innovative about game times.
Yeah,
and we're still making the same mistakes. Look at the club rugby versus Super W stuff you raised earlier. Like, we're still not smart about our scheduling and fixturing and getting the timings right to capture that audience. No, I think sevens is the summer. Sevens is the summer ticket.
Yep.
Like, you know, like, having the sevens tournament in Australia in summer is a real winner for rugby, I think.
Yep.
It's just harder than when we leverage off that, Mickey.
Yeah.
And not having any provincial stuff from June to September is a real...
I know.
It's a real hard yakka for rugby as well, because you're falling back on the club system. And unless you're investing in the club system and promoting it, it gets forgotten about a bit.
Completely forgotten. Yeah.
Like not for diehards like you and I. We go down the
we'll watch go and club watch it. Rugby, yeah, but the media doesn't care.
No, but the media don't care about club rugby. So we kind of if you're not talking about the Wallabies, you're not talking about anything.
Mm.
And that's where rugby sort of falls right behind in
and where we drop off
June to October window.
Yeah, and rugby when rugby drops off, that's when the NFL and NRL and the in the AFL, that's their semi-finals, their grand finals. It generates so much hype, and people in Australia want to watch something. Yeah. So all the rugby kind of fans, the ones who are just kind of on the fence, they just go, "Oh, here's something to watch." So it's tough.
Yeah.
It's tough.
Yeah, maybe there is something we can need to do more. Like, that's where Rugby Australia need to be a bit more innovative with the club stuff, mate. Like, do we shorten up the mainstream club seasons and bring in the club championship type stuff?
Yeah.
In that period when the Wallabies are on and the club championship stuff backfills it. So yeah. There's at least something to talk about.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And the NRC sort of played that role to a certain extent.
Yes, well, I'd be happy to bring that back. I thought that was a terrific idea. But anyway, what do we know?
What do we know?
All right, mate. Well, that'll do us tonight. Good to catch up. Enjoy Adelaide.
Yeah, mate. There's plenty on. There's always stuff on happening around rugby traps. So keep sharing, all the people out there that listen to the podcast. Keep, now that we're in rugby season, share your stories, share your good news story. Oh, A Day in Union is on this Saturday too, Mickey.
Okay. Right.
Day in Union. So it's that initiative that, was it Greg Mum?
Yes, I think it was. Yeah, we had him on last year, the year before.
So
the
annual Day in Union Day is this Saturday, 6th of April. Yep. I'll be refereeing at the Darwin Masters 10s.
Yep. Don't tear anything.
We can. No. Jeremy Paul's apparently the guest at the long lunch this year, Mick.
Okay.
Big shoes to fill after you did it last year. And then I'll be refereeing on Saturday. So.
Oh, nice.
Limiting my game time. I will not take my mouth guard or boots, just a whistle. And then there's club rugby all around the place. So it's going to be good. I think we can officially tick off for an official rugby season.
Rugby season, mate. Yeah, which is great. And if you know anyone, if there's any stories out there, if anyone's got a milestone or anyone you want to give a shout out to, just drop us a something on Twitter at @rugby_app or Facebook, and we'll give someone a shout out. Or if it's a bit of a story, we'll get them on and do a bit of a profile, because we do like giving the club rugby people a bit of a plug wherever they may be playing. So that's good. All right, Mitch, mate, enjoy Adelaide.
Thanks, mate.
I'll talk to you next week.
To everyone else, heat for me.
Will do. To everyone else, thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Rugby Wrap.